All right. Good morning again. We are now on for argument in case number 79224, the State Department of Business and Industry, Financial Institutions Division versus Title Max. Okay. Counsel, are you ready today?
I am, Your Honor.
Great. And I see a thumbs up for Mr. Polzenberg. All right. So, Ms. Stern, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Sure. I'd like to try and reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if possible.
Sure. So, as you know, the yellow light will come on at 5 minutes, but if you keep going, you use it up.
Okay. Sounds fair.
All right. All right. Go ahead, please.
Okay. May it please the court, Heidi Perry Stern on behalf of Appellant, State of Nevada. The loan product at issue here, as structured and implemented by Title Max, violates the plain language and the legislative intent of NRS 604A, which is a consumer protection statute, having a goal of keeping certain types of high-interest, high-risk loans to a fixed and relatively short duration, thereby limiting the amount of interest the customer pays and protecting that customer from a cycle of debt. While NRS 604A-5074 specifically limits the term of a title loan to a maximum of 210 days and explicitly prohibits any expansion of that time period under any name, Title Max's loan product here has no fixed end date for payment and extends the payment due date on the original principal well beyond the 210-day outer limit. While NRS 604A-5074's time limit ensures that title loan customers pay no more than 210 days worth of amortized interest payments, a limit recognized by this court in the first Title Max case, Title Max's loan product requires customers to make an interest-only payment and does not reduce the principal, ensuring that Title Max collects more than 210 days of amortized interest. And with regard to 604A's limited permission for extensions on title loans, available only for 30-day loans, NRS 604A-065 prohibits any loan that extends payment, quote, beyond the date on which the loan is required to be paid in full under the original terms of the loan agreement.
Ms. Stern, if the legislature wanted to outlaw refinancings, it could have said so expressly. And one of the struggles in this area is the extent to which policy we're being asked to drive our interpretation of statutes by policy that was not articulated expressly in the statute. And it concerns me. The case law in this area obviously favors recognition of the remedial purpose served by this statute and the debt treadmill and so on. But by the same token, the high interest loans and deferred deposit loans both specifically address and limit refinancing, whereas the title loan doesn't. And it strikes me that we're writing this statute by inserting refinancing to credit your argument. Could you comment on that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. While, as this court knows from our briefing, the state's position is that the fact that Title Max calls its product a refinancing is irrelevant to this court's analysis, we can actually look at the structure and language of NRS 604A to explain why the term refinance, occurs in the portions of the statutes dealing with high interest and deferred deposit loans. So taking a look at those portions, the portions of the statute that address high interest and deferred deposit loans are written as prohibitions. What a lender, quote, shall not do. And if this court looks at those sections, you will see that in each section dealing with refinance and dealing with high interest and deferred deposit loans, it says shall not. Thus, the legislature used comprehensive language to ensure that the potentially prohibited conduct is comprehensively included. The word refinance in this context is used in conjunction with other descriptive words, repayment, renewal, refinance, and consolidation, so as to comprehensively capture potentially prohibited conduct. And these sections are written in a manner that acknowledge explicitly that some form of loan restructuring, including refinancing, are permitted for high interest and deferred deposit loans. In subsection 5037, it says this up front. It says, quote, except as otherwise provided. So indicating that the legislature knows that there will be provision for some restructuring. In addition, in subsection 5057, it provides specifically for a type of restructuring with limits. The legislature's language in 5037 and 5057 is thus aimed at limiting the duration and circumstances of such restructuring. But in contrast, 604A.5074, the title loan section of 604A, is not written in a prohibitive shall not manner. Rather, it delineates what a title lender may do, and that is why it is written differently. As a statute,
so you would ask us to read 604A.5074 to flatly prohibit any refinancing of a title loan. Is that your argument?
That is the argument, because it is written from the assumption that such a refinancing is not available. No restructuring of the loan beyond 210 days and no collection of amortized interest beyond 210 days is permitted. Now, like I was saying, Section 5074 does have a permissive portion of that statute. That is the statute, the portion dealing with extensions. And as a statute giving permission to do something, it's like if Your Honor could imagine a closed door. In subsection 5074, the legislature is slightly opening that door. And as a result, they've written the statute in a permissive way using narrow and strict language. This makes sense because there is no allowance in the title loan context for refinancing, renewal, repayment, or consolidation. The legislature provided one way to extend a title loan, up to 210 days. And similar language does not occur with regard to other high interest loans. This
so
is why
if the borrower cases, comes in, if the borrower comes in and wants to pay off the loan and get a new loan at the same time, I guess you're saying that would not be a refinancing? That would,
if it
or
would
is that new transaction pay, off the table in your read of this statute?
I don't have an opinion on whether it's a, quote, refinancing. What I do have an opinion on is any restructuring that Title Max enters into cannot result in it receiving more than 210 days of amortized interest on the loan. That is the restriction that they violate through their
current loan. So if the car owner brought the amount of money needed to pay off the loan when it was due in full, but wanted that same day to initiate a new loan.
Oh, well, that's a different circumstance, Your Honor. Yes. If the customer brings the money to actually pay off the principal, that's fine. That's not what happens here. As a matter of fact and of substance, the original principal just continues, and it continues to accrue interest.
Any different? He enters a new transaction. Like if he let's say the loan was $2,000 was what it took to pay off, and so he brings the lender $2,000, and the lender says okay, and the guy says I want to make a new loan for $2,000 because I just borrowed this money from someone else, so he enters the new loan. That would be a permissible transaction, but what's not permissible is for him to say you loan me the $2,000 to make the new loan, and I'll pay off the old one with it.
There's one small part that you're missing, Your Honor. And that is that the customer is also required to pay off that first month interest. So the customer is already forced by Title Max's current loan product to pay interest above and beyond the 210-day limit.
Okay.
That is the distinction. That's the crux of the violation here.
I'm sorry, Ms. Stern, Justice Kadish, can you explain what you just said? I'm not sure I understood that.
Yes, Title Max's loan product, and this is undisputed, when the customer comes in after 30 days and accepts the terms of this loan product, they have to make an interest-only payment. They basically have to pay all of the interest that's accrued over the past 30 days. And For example, if this court looks at the example that TitleMax itself includes in its answering brief on page 44, that hypothetical customer started with a principal of $400. The customer accepts TitleMax's refinance offer and makes an interest-only payment of $76.75. Every 30 days, the process repeats itself. If the customer continues to accept this refinancing, the customer pays off the prior month's interest but still owes the $400 in principal, which continues to accrue interest on its full $400 amount. Contrast that with what should happen under NRS 604A's terms. The customer should make a monthly payment of $105, ratably and fully amortizing the $400 loan over the course of 210 days. Bottom line, this customer, for want of approximately $28, the difference between the amortizing payment and the interest-only payment ends up solidly on the debt treadmill. And that is what TitleMax's loan product does, and that is why it violates NRS 604A. I see that I have about 5 minutes. If the court does not have any current questions for me, I will save that.
I would like you briefly to address the issue with respect to the loan and the value of the vehicle and whether or not the loan includes interest.
Yeah, so the fact here is that NRS 604A prohibits TitleMax from making a title loan that exceeds the fair market value of the vehicle securing the loan. And so the state's contention is that in making the determination of what the customer is able to pay, TitleMax needs to include the entire loan transaction. And this is based on this court's own finding in Czech City, that a loan is not just the principal amount. A loan is the entire cost of the transaction.
That's but the statutes were worded. The statutes in Czech City and the statute at issue in this case are worded differently in a significant respect, in that Czech City's dealt with the entire transaction, where ours in this case is a loan made pursuant to a loan agreement that charges interest. So to me, on just a bare read of this statute, it seems like interest is beside the point in calculating the amount of the loan.
I would point out to this court that TitleMax is required in the loan agreement and as part of the loan agreement to disclose to the borrower how much interest it's at the borrower is actually going to be paying, as well as the fee. And so there's really, even though the statutes are worded differently, ultimately there's no difference. The loan agreement requires payment of the loan with interest and fees. And TitleMax has to disclose that. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Polzenberg.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dan Polzenberg for the respondent, TitleMax. NRS 604A treats refinancing different when it comes to title loans. And that's what a lot of the discussion we've had already has been talking about. When we're dealing with high interest loans, NRS 604A 5037 prohibits refinancing beyond 90 days. And the title of it is limitations. And deferred deposits, NRS 604A 501 also limits to 90 days. Again, the title is a limitation. This court addressed refinancing, not whether it's nobody suggested it was prohibited in Dollar Loan Center. The question was, what limitations would there be? And that case involved NRS 604A 480, which is now found in section 5029 and 5057. There are limitations on what there it had to do with whether a deferred deposit or high interest loan lender could bring a civil action for enforcement. Again, the titles of those statutes are limitations. This court, the legislature rather, has put limitations on refinancing for the other two types of loans, but not at all for title lenders. And in fact, if you look at the 2005 legislative history, you can see that it was originally proposed for all three types of loans, that there be an 8-week limitation on refinancing. Now, the legislature amended that bill that created 604A to take out the limitation on refinancing for title loans. And in the legislative history, Assemblywoman Barbara Buckley said title loans are different. So there's a reason the legislature treats them differently. And here's the reason. Title loans are non-recourse loans, which is also a reason why you wouldn't want to follow their argument on including interest in the value of the loan. But title loans are non-recourse loans. The lender cannot go against the borrower. The lender can only go against the collateral of the vehicle. Now, is that important? Well, the majority opinion in Dollar Loan Center, talking about the policy behind 604A and the debt treadmill, said that that is a critical distinction. Because when you're looking at deferred deposit loans and high interest loans where there is the ability to go against the lender, or the borrower rather, then that brings into focus the idea of the debt treadmill. Here, a title borrower can always walk away and not owe any additional interest, not owe the principal, and that was a critical factor for the majority in Dollar Loan Center.
But Mr. Polzenberg, sorry, it's Justice Kadish. So
I do know that.
Thanks. The statute specifically says it's up to 210 days, not subject to any extension. The payments must ratably and fully amortize the entire amount of principal and interest. How does what your client is doing comply with that? They're ending up the same amount that they borrowed, the principal is not paid back and ends up getting extended out for a longer period of time with more interest.
First of all, I apologize for perpetuating that hypothetical. None of the cases that we have in the record or in the briefs actually have somebody who just makes interest-only payments for 7 months. And you can see most of the time in the examples at the first chart in the state's brief, you have people refinancing once or twice in one circumstance, three times, over a period as much as 4 or 5 months. This is just something to give flexibility to borrowers.
Don't the statute say there isn't that flexibility? 7 months is it?
No. In fact, what it says, 5074 says the payments have to be calculated to be ratably and amortized. In experience, we all know, and a large section of the briefs talk about that, that there are circumstances when people can pay it off earlier, that doesn't concern the court, and later. Last time we were here, we talked about grace periods. The legislature in 2017 changed the grace period statute and made it clear you can charge interest during a grace period. So it's the calculation of the, as 5074 says, the original provisions that have to be amortized. Are you limited to 210 days? Even without an extension, you're not limited to 210 days. That's the calculation on the original proposal. And 604.
Mr. Polzenberg, this is Justice Pickering. Your colleague across the aisle is arguing when you read 5074 as written, without resort to the legislative history, that you can have extensions if it's a 30-day loan, up to 7 extensions. But if it's a 210-day loan, it says point blank, the loan is not subject to any extensions. So why is not this refinancing a species of extension that's covered by that, particularly given the other statute that says extension by any other name is the same thing?
Because it's different in kind. An extension is simply that, an extension of that loan. Council brought up that all these statutes talk about repayment, renewal, refinancing, and consolidation. Well, certainly the statute is recognizing that refinancing is something and not something prohibited unless it's expressly prohibited. Refinancing, as is clear from 5029 and 5075, it's the use of another loan to end this loan.
What would a rollover be that's different than what your client is doing?
A rollover is a rollover, more accurately, is a pushback. I know they keep using the phrase in their brief, roll into, but that rolling something into a new loan is not a rollover. A rollover, a renewal, an extension, they're all continuing the same loan.
Because your client moves money from one pocket to another and says, oh, now it's a new loan, so it's not really an extension, but you have seven more months to pay the same money.
It is different. They say it's not substantively different, but it is different. The statutes recognize that you can use money from a new loan to pay an old loan. Now, the hypothetical that we brought up does have them just paying the interest. But you can see from the record and the cases described in the brief, that's not what happens most of the time. Sometimes principal is paid down, so when you refinance, the payments are lower. Sometimes you're taking out additional amounts. Sometimes you have two loans on the same collateral, so you are consolidating those through a refinance. Refinance is something the legislature knew about, and I think the legislative history is critical, but I also think just looking at the language of 604A as a whole makes clear that refinancing is different from extending. Justice Kadish, you asked me in our grace period argument, is the question here whether it's a grace period or an extension? And I said, no, I think the question there is just whether it's a grace period because it's a defined term. Now, I didn't do too well with that answer, but here I think it's critical that the legislature realizes that there is a difference because it takes on refinancing, it regulates refinancing, and it doesn't prohibit refinancing when it comes to title loans. Title loans are different in kind.
Could you comment on the standard of review with respect to the deference argued to be owed the agency's interpretation of this statute?
Yeah, we've been fighting a lot on what that standard is, including in our supplemental authorities. I think the deference to an agency has to do more with administrative or operational issues. I think this is critical when we're dealing with the FID, because I mentioned before, and our briefs mentioned, in 2017, the legislature came in and clarified that Section 210 does actually allow interest during a grace period. That's not an issue. But I use that to illustrate the fact that FID does not always advocate the position that is clear from the legislature. So, and even if there is deference, that deference would never overcome the clear language. And I think which is legislature prohibits, limits and prohibits refinancing in two other contexts, doesn't prohibit or limit it in this context, and expressly took out a provision in 2005 that would have limited. And more recently, was that 2017? In 2017, there was a bill to amend 604A to prohibit refinancing for title loans, and the legislature rejected it. Now, the state comes in and says, well, they rejected it for other issues. Well, I don't see how they prove that, but I do see how the legislature, and besides, if the legislature agreed with the FID, they could have taken that one section out of the bill and passed it. So the legislature has I don't think we're in deference here, and I think my argument on the clear language is pretty strong.
Mr. Polzenberg, if I might, this is Justice Herndon. I had a question on the secondary issue regarding the total loan amount, fair market value of vehicles. Under 604A 105, it defines a title loan as a loan made pursuant to a loan agreement. In this court's Czech City decision, we acknowledged that a loan agreement includes various terms, including both the amount borrowed and any fees charged. So how does this title max loan scenario differ from our analysis of a loan agreement in Czech City?
Czech City, again, we're talking about the different kinds of loans under 604A. Czech City involved a deferred deposit loan in which, and the statute said the value of the vehicle has to match up with the loan transaction, as Justice Pickering pointed out. And that makes sense when you're talking about a deferred deposit, because what you're doing in a deferred deposit is writing a check. The borrower is writing a check for a particular amount that the lender can cash in 2 weeks. So it's, you've got to look at the entire transaction in that context. I'm not saying you have to. The legislature is saying that. Here we're talking about the loan. And the loan, I mean, you take out a mortgage on your house and it's $100,000, you're not going to say, wow, it's a $200,000 mortgage. It's a $100,000 mortgage because that's the amount being financed. Now, yes, the Truth in Lending Act does disclose, require us to disclose the amounts to be paid in the future. We have to do that in anything, but that doesn't mean that that's the value of the loan. And it seems
so would you have us interpret the word loan as used in the deferred deposit context to mean something different from loan as used in the title loan context? I mean, because you have to get away from Czech City to front your argument.
Yeah, but there it dealt with the idea of the transaction, not just the amount being financed. And I could make an argument on, if I were on the other side, for a 30-day title loan that you're looking at the amount that would be due in 30 days. But I don't think you look at finance charges going out 210 days. Let me also say I think that this argument does a disservice for title borrowers, because right now the most we can loan is the value of the car. If the amount we would loan would include the interest, that means anybody borrowing against a vehicle would have to collateralize the future interest. And it wouldn't be the same ability to just walk away and avoid the debt treadmill. This way, if they walk away and the collateral is just for the amount of the principal, there is no real harm, there's no real detriment, there's no real debt treadmill. So I don't think the debt treadmill applies in this context, although it's an overriding principle. This court in Dollar Loan Center made clear where you don't have the ability to get recourse against the borrower, it's not the debt treadmill. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Stern?
Thank you, Your Honors. Why the difference in treatment in the statute for title loans? Because title loans are a collateralized high-interest loan. A customer obtaining one risks losing a crucial tool of daily life, their vehicle. They need to take themselves to work. They need to take their children to school. They need to buy groceries. And as such, the legislature decided to treat these loans differently, with a focus on keeping them strictly within a 210-day window, so that they are actually paid back in a timely manner, and that minimizes the customer's risk of losing their car. I would urge this court again to look at the substance of what Title Max's loan product does here. In reality, it's not the refinance that it claims. The original loan principal is, in fact, not really satisfied or paid in full. In fact, the customer continues to owe the entire principal amount. And in violation of this court's own decision in the first Title Max case, it continues to owe and pay interest on the full loan amount. It's undisputed that Title Max does not return the customer's title, nor does it provide the customer with a paid-in-full receipt for the original loan as required by 604A.508. Title Max in this case is like the teenager insisting that the fiesta, soiree, and get-together that he hosted in his parents' absence from home did not constitute the party that his parents prohibited. This court must not overlook the reality of Title Max's violation of Nevada's consumer protection statutes, must reverse the district court's order, and impose a proper reading of NRS 604A.
So Ms. Stern, I apologize. In the minute we have left, just want to understand them. What happens when, so the person has done this 210-day loan and they can't make the payment back. What are the options that the loan company has?
Yes, a repayment plan is specifically provided for in NRS 604A. I believe that's subsection 6035. Could be wrong on that, but I believe that's it. Also, they can offer a grace period, as this court recognized in Title Max 1. Those are our options. But what Title Max may not do is foist upon its customers the loan product at issue here under any name. And with that, the state rests its case. Thank you.
Thank you. Were there any other questions? Seeing none.
I'm still here.
No, okay. Chief, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Thanks, counsel. We'll be in recess.